if you were waiting to find joy or find the love in what you do, I love what I do. That'd be like saying, I'll be happy when this happens. I'll be happy when I make $100,000, you know, gross $100,000. I'll be happy. Well, then you're missing out on all these little things you can be happy in on getting there. Maybe you'll never get there. Maybe you'll get that degree or that promotion or that $100,000. But there's great things that happen every day. And so it's you talking about finding joy in the process, finding things you can be happy in with the process, not the outcome. And I think that's that, if you can really grab onto that, I think that's a profound shift for people.
Hey guys, don't forget to check out the Street Cop Training Conference, April 23rd through the 28th, 2023 at the Gaylord Opryland Resort and Convention Center. It's going to be a great experience. 5 career-changing days, some of the most profound speakers in the industry. Guest speakers include Rob O'Neill, the guy who killed Bin Laden, Kyle Carpenter, the youngest living Congressional Medal of Honor winner, Fox News host Tommy Lahren, Navy SEAL American war hero Jason Redman, Sheriff David Clark, Sheriff Mark Lamb, and Sheriff Wayne Ivey. You'll also spend time with all of our Street Cop instructors at this event Monday through Friday. We'll have a great lineup of courses in addition to our great speakers. It will be a week that you will not forget. You'll be thankful you came. You don't want to miss out. Check out StreetCop.com on how to register. If you're going to use the room code, make sure you book it from Sunday through Friday. That's what the code's good for, and it's about half the price of the regular rate. But those rooms are running out, so make sure you sign up now. We'll see you there.
Street Cop.
Hey guys, welcome to this episode of the Street Cop Training Podcast. I'm your host, founder and CEO of Street Cop Training. I'm pumped. We already talked a little bit. We're going to rock. It's going to be a good episode. I can feel it. Pumped about the latest Apple iTunes rating. We're top 100 in the education space in the world. How fucking nuts is that?
Wow.
Isn't that crazy?
Wow.
We're looking at the list yesterday.
Well, it's not surprising.
Thank you. I appreciate that. But I'm looking at like Tony Robbins in the top 100 and like all these big names. I'm like, who the fuck are we, right? Like, it's really cool. So a lot of podcast people I admire are in it. So I've been on a fucking high for about 2 days, but I'm pumped to have you, and you caught me at a really good time, high energy, and I'm glad that you're here. You've got a cool story, but thank you, Bridget Truxillo, for being here today. Is that an Italian last name?
It's Spanish. So my husband, it used to be Trujillo, which is how a lot of times that's how people pronounce it. My husband's family.
You tricked me. See that? I knew it was going to be something with that X.
No,
you...
but it is Truxillo because my husband's family, they can trace it like hundreds of years back to this small town in Spain called Trujillo. And then basically the family immigrated into what was, Spanish territory in Louisiana, and it became French. And then somewhere in there, the X happened, and the people in New Orleans, which is where my husband's from, used the X, like Truxillo. I mean, that's just the Cajun New Orleans weirdo way. Not weird. They're a unique breed, the people from New Orleans.
You got caught.
Yep. Anyway, one of my husband's cousins listens to podcasts whenever I post them, and she's going to send me a message as soon as she hears that I said that.
We're not editing it either.
Love you, Kelly.
You own that now. You've owned that. That's on the record.
Tell
us who you are and tell the Street Cop world about what you're doing.
Yeah. So Bridget Truxillo, I am an attorney, and I've been an attorney now for, 15 years. And before that, I was a deputy sheriff in Florida. I went to the University of Florida for college. And the week after I graduated, I went to the police academy because I thought that I wanted to do federal law enforcement. So I did local law enforcement to get there. I started out in patrol like everybody. But within a year, I was in undercover narcotics. And I say that I bought crack for a living because I bought a lot of crack. And also, I was on the SWAT team. I was the only female member of the SWAT team. My agency was not big enough to have a full-time team. So it's what you call it. It's called a call-out team. But we did a shit ton of training. I freaking loved it. Loved it. And I loved it until I didn't, because I was the only female on the team. And that ended up not working out too well. So about 3 years into narcotics and about 2.5 of SWAT, I decided to leave to go to law school because I decided that I didn't want to fight the battles that I was facing in my agency. And I figured that I met federal investigators through my job as a narcotics investigator and realized that the stuff I was facing in law enforcement, being a female, and I'm just never going to be a wallflower. I'm never going to be the person that just shows up to work and coasts. I'm always going to be somebody that wants to go at it and balls to the wall and only female and SWAT. Like, I don't ever take the easy route. And I just didn't want to keep fighting those battles within law enforcement. So decided I would go to law school, having no idea what I wanted to do with it, but knowing that someday I wanted to help cops. And so that's what I do now, is I did the law firm world for a long time and learned a lot about litigation on the civil side. And now I represent cops in civil issues, and I help with wellness training. So, because I say my job is that I'm an attorney, but my passion is wellness for cops, because I really want cops to stay on the job. I want them to figure out how to be happy, figure out how to balance all the shit that you deal with, and just stay in. So I started out developing this wellness. And then as I've shared that story, or get that, you know, share that I have this product out there, people hear that I'm an attorney and then all the stuff that I went through, and then they reach out to me to help. And I can't, I mean, sometimes I can't help, but a lot of times I can. And I know, like you said, I mean, I know what you've gone through because I lived it. I know what it's like to feel like your agency is throwing you under the bus. I know what it's like to feel like you have nobody you can turn to. I know what it's like to be in a union and feel like even then you don't know what to do. So that all that I do now is I just want to help. I say, I wish that I could help the person I was back then, because I know, I understand the options. And so I do a lot of consulting with people and just helping them understand the process and figure out what their options are. So that's what I do. That's me. And I have three kids. They're 11, 10, and 5. I live in Houston, Texas, but I'm from all over the South, originally from Louisiana. And that's me.
That's a cool story.
Thanks.
And I have to ask, how do you look so vibrant and bright? You see that a lot. I'm going to zoom, and I'm saying, like, you look young. You got a good routine. No question about it.
I do believe, I mean, I walk the walk, you know, about the wellness stuff. I mean, I take care of myself. I literally walk. I do this, like, right now, especially you follow Sisu Way, Scott McGee. And 3 years ago, he does it every year. Right now in December, he does the 1 mile challenge. And so especially, I do it anyway. I mean, I'm active. I work out. But especially in December, I like to do his 1 mile challenge, where you at least move 1 mile, or your walk or run 1 mile a day. So I do that. I literally do this step challenge right now. But, you know, I meditate. I work pretty hard on eating well, because I want to be happy. I want to enjoy my kids. I want to enjoy my husband. I want to enjoy my job. I want to enjoy life. And I think that requires, I believe 100%, it doesn't just happen. You have to put effort into it, like all things. And so I put a lot of effort into health and wellness and happiness.
Do you enjoy productivity as well?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah, I can tell. I can tell. And the reason I ask that is because I'm beginning to explore at this junction in my life of what makes me the happiest. And productivity is just my drug. I mean, I can't tell you the high that I'm on right now learning. It's weird because some dude messaged me on Facebook, like a random message. And I just happy timed it right. I don't have so many messages. It's insane. Anybody who's listening, if you've sent me a message, I'm sorry. Like, there's hundreds of them. And I know that you all want legal advice. We try to do it universally. I can't spend the day answering 200 legal questions a day. But I saw one, a guy just sent something over and said, hey, congrats on being a top podcast. So I came in yesterday and I said to Frankie, I said, Frank, can you do me a favor? Can you go onto the Apple list and the ranking list and find where we are? And he came back and he's like, bro, we're number 92 in the world. And I'm like, no fucking way, right? So we just received something 2 weeks ago from Spotify that says, like, hey, congrats. You guys are awesome. Here's why. You're top 1% in the world, heard in 58 different countries. And I'm like,
good God.
We didn't even do this 2 years. We goofed off with this thing. I just started taking some more videos from the group on Facebook that we have. And I'm like, you know, convert those to a podcast. I'll catch up. And now I'm like, we've shifted maybe 7 or 8 months ago to, like, hey, this is real. Let's triple down on this shit. We built a really cool studio here. That's continuing to be built. We have more stuff coming. It continues to evolve, but it's the productivity. And we're in the season right now where Christmas parties, Christmas holidays, every weekend. And I'm like, I'm so thankful I've been able to stay focused and dodge what I consider to be the most anti-productive thing known to mankind, at least in my world, and that's alcohol. it really is one of those things that is so anti-productive that, and I watch it. Right. And then, you know, recently my wife said to me, what is your issue with alcohol? I go, you know what? It's just that I like being productive so much. And that completely stops me dead in my tracks. I'm just addicted to being productive. It's an obsession.
I think that too is an important, I think it's important to have self-awareness. And I think that's a journey in life that I talk a lot about. And it's right up here in my bookshelf, The Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz. And one of those I talk a lot about is the second agreement is don't take things personally. And if you can really, I mean, the first time I read that, it was 20 years ago. And I'm not ashamed, I'm 47 years old. So I started.
You're 47?
Amazing. Yes.
No way. Oh, you're going to be here forever. I thought you were, I actually thought I was going to insult you by saying we were the same age. I already said that earlier.
Yeah.
If I looked at you, I would say you're at least 10 years younger, if not more. I would think God, you're right in your mid-30s. Yeah.
I'll take it. I'm running. I'm going to take it and run with it, but I'm not. And so I started, I had this fantastic mentor in my 20s. I actually worked at a gym, a health club, and this, but my supervisor, I became a supervisor, worked under him, and we would do this supervisor training weekly at a health club. And weekly, all the supervisors would meet, and we would do the 4-7 Habits of Highly Effective People, Four Agreements by Don Miguel Ruiz, and some other books like that. The 1 Minute Manager by Ken Blanchard, by the way, I think it's a very short read. Everybody should read it. It helps you in your professional life, your personal life. Now, the gist of that is give feedback immediately and right away, especially if it's negative, because you want people to remember what you say, not how you said it. And if you wait too long to give feedback, especially negative, then they're only going to remember that you're an asshole, not what they need to improve, but also 4-1 on positive to negative. So don't just tell people negative, tell them the positive. So anyway, there you go. You don't have to read the book, but it is a great book and it's very short. You should read it. And so I had this amazing training, like I said, in my early 20s. And the first time you read that, especially to me, it was that second one. I'm like, what do you mean? Don't take things personal. I don't take things personal. And even just saying that means I'm taking it personal. But I think that journey of really the fact that you have the self-awareness of knowing what alcohol does to you. And maybe that's something that took you a little while to get to. But for me, same thing. I did this thing in September where I just cut it out completely because I needed to change my relationship with it. I needed it to not, it can't be like, oh, I'm so stressed, so I need a glass of wine. Like, no, I don't. It's fine. And I can skip it. And then it's more of a habit thing. And like, I don't use it to drown my sorrows. It's just, it was a habit thing. And I really, and I do drink. I mean, it's the holidays. And I'm, like I said, I'm married to a man from New Orleans. And they start drinking when they're like 2. I'm just kidding. They don't all do that. But, you know, I enjoy it. And then sometimes I don't. And so like, I definitely am looking forward to dry January and, you know, resetting. But I think that takes awareness. And when you say proactive to me, I think that's also means personal accountability. And you have that if you're able to see that and become aware of it. And, you know, you're not slapping a label or a judgment on somebody else, but you just see it about yourself. But I think that is a journey and having the wherewithal to see that and know that about yourself, I think is a powerful tool, and it's not easy to do. So kudos to you for doing that work for yourself, and everybody can do it. That's what I was just having a good conversation with somebody the other day about. Like, it's never too late. Something you don't like about yourself, or I don't care if you're 22 or 82, just do it. I mean, it's that easy. Just do it.
When I say the things that I say about how I see things or how I view certain things and habits and whatever it may be, good or bad, I don't say them with the intention of bragging. I say them with the intention of maybe affecting somebody's life. And I was just telling somebody this about an hour ago. And because that person said the same exact thing we're talking about is like, you know, you got to sometimes watch what you say, because it does come off or it can come off in the incorrect manner. I go, well, sometimes I don't even talk. And she said, well, that's actually a good idea too, sometimes. But I said, for me, when I met my friend Rob, who'll be on the podcast in January, he's the number one realtor. Everybody drives in New Jersey, you'll see his sign say, Rob sells New Jersey. They're all over. He's extremely successful. And I met him about 8 years ago. And I just needed to see it to know what it was. And I thought to myself, here's a guy who's 2 years younger than me. His brother's 5 years younger than me. They're driving $250,000 cars. They're from where I'm from. And they're just doing things differently. I just didn't know, probably because I wasn't seeking it, maybe I was waiting for it to come to my doorstep and it did, but I didn't know what was possible. And I looked at these two guys and said, anything's possible. They're no different than me. Mm-hmm. And that was those profound moments. I'm like, what do I have to change? And I remember like them almost like knocking me a little bit. I'm like, hey, where are you guys going? Like, well, we're going to an event, a seminar. I'm like, where's that? And they're like, oh, it's in Canada. And I'm like, oh, like, tell me about it. They're like, well, you don't get the money to go. And they were right. I didn't. Like, it's $5,000 a ticket. And I'm like, okay. And I'm just analyzing these guys. I'm like, all right. Yeah, it's okay. So these guys are employing massive discipline in the sense of they're constantly educating. So seeing that, I'm like, that's what I'm going to do. And guess what? It's not uncommon for me to spend $5,000, $10,000 a ticket, $3,000, $4,000 a ticket to go to these events. I think the kind of events you go to change as you go through life try to develop more personal growth. I say this publicly not to say like, look at me, I'm better than you. That's not what I'm saying. I'm saying, guys, you hear this shit all the time. You just hear it from people. Oh, I'm no different than anybody else. If I could do it, you could do it. It's fucking true. Like, it just is. It takes extreme discipline. You can get there, but there's a give and take to it. And it's a road that most people don't want to go down, and that's fine. But if there are people out there who it's speaking to, you know, that's the point of me saying it. I'd rather not say it. And somebody at least hear it and say, you know what? This made a lot of sense to me. I get those calls. Mm-hmm. You know, I get those, hey man, that really changed what you said. Or I meet him in person. Hey, it really changed my thought on things. It really helped me out a lot there. Or it gave me that push to go do something great with my life. Mm-hmm. And again, there is greatness in everything that you do. It's how you see life. There's a interesting thought process. You can love what you do or do what you love. And nobody gets to do what they love. So you make that shift of, I love what I do. Even in here, one of the girls maybe 2 months ago said to me, but you love what you do. I said, I do love what I do. She goes, but you do what you love as well. And I went, well, hold on a second. There are moments that I love this, but there are a lot of things that go along with this that I don't love. Mm-hmm. I don't love being in the airport on fucking Sundays and Monday nights and sleeping on planes and eating whatever's available in the airport and missing workouts, missing my kids losing teeth. That's why I just caught the first one. I have four. I was finally home for a kid losing their tooth. And I was like, it was profound for me. It's like these little things. I've missed birthdays. I've missed Halloweens. I've missed holidays. I've missed weddings. And I've missed all these things. Mm-hmm. And I'm okay with that. So there's a lot of stuff about it I don't love, right? But like, there's the other side of it that I do. And I'm willing to do those things to do the other things. So, you know, even sitting here talking with you is, you know, it's a life-changing event for me. I find you very admirable. And I want you to know that.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, you as well. Well, we talked earlier. I love what you do and the consistency and the message. And obviously, you being ranked in the top in the world, you know. Other people think that too. I think what you're saying too is it's your honesty and your willingness to share parts about yourself that maybe would be surprising, and just being really, really honest in what you share. And I think, like I say, for example, like I talk to a counselor every 2 to 4 weeks, and I think that is such an amazing, I don't think any, first of all, I think all humans should. I think it would be good for all humans to talk to a counselor every 2 to 4 weeks just to see what's on your mind. And sometimes I sit down with her and I will start. I've learned the hard way. Like, oh, I'm fine. I'm going to cancel this call today. I don't feel like I need to talk about anything. And then like the shit will hit the fan that day. And so I don't cancel the calls. I might move it a week and say, let's do this next week instead of today. But I get on the call with her and say, okay, let me just think about what's been happening lately. And something will come out. I'm like, oh yeah. And there was this thing and I was pissed and we talk about it and she'll ask the whys and then this, and like, I don't know, but then I felt this way and I don't know why. And then we'll talk about it. And it's being willing to share that with something like that with people. You think, oh, I can't believe, Bridget does all these things. And sometimes women will say to me, oh, but I'm, like, you're such a badass. I could never be SWAT. Like, but I'm still just a person who deals with shit. And I want to find a way to deal with that in a very balanced and healthy way. But what I also loved about what you said is you love, if you were waiting to find joy or find the love in what you do, I love what I do. That'd be like saying, I'll be happy when this happens. I'll be happy when I make gross $100,000. I'll be happy. Well, then you're missing out on all these little things you can be happy in on getting there. Maybe you'll never get there. Maybe you'll get that degree or that promotion or that $100,000. But there's great things that happen every day. And so it's you talking about finding joy in the process, finding things you can be happy in with the process, not the outcome. And I think that's that, if you can really grab onto that, I think that's a profound shift for people, is there is happiness in every day. And that's what I talk about a lot in like the wellness side, is it's talking to the therapist that I can let go of things and find ways, or, you know, an argument with my husband and realize, okay, well, I can let this go. And not just that marriage is a marathon, not a sprint. Pick your battles, and we all know that, but it's more about, you know, but there is something that's wonderful that's going to happen today, and I don't want to miss it because I'm holding on to something or waiting to find happiness later. Like, you know, enjoying my kids being home for Christmas these 2 weeks, and shifting what my work schedule is going to be, and that's okay. And, you know, just finding the joy in the process. And I think that, you know, something I just wrote that down every day. I'm going to find joy in my day. What is it? It's like writing down the things you're grateful for. You can find those things. Just sometimes it is a proactive effort. And I think that's what you do in saying what you just described.
I will also add into that your environment is a major factor. And I don't mean just people. Mm-hmm. I mean, everything that you're doing, constantly taking in data. We live in an inherently negative world, especially mm-hmm. in a police department. And when you're young and impressionable, you get sucked into this culture of like words like that guy's a shitbag, right? Like this fucking mm-hmm. skell, things like mm-hmm. that. Now, I don't think that comes out of people being malicious or bad human beings. I think that's you succumbing to the culture. And it takes real strength to mm-hmm. acknowledge what you're surrounded in. And I just go back to muster room all the time, right? Every muster, mm-hmm. like fucking complaining. Like mm-hmm. talk about a muster where things were good. Can you think of a muster or a roll call where somebody talked about something positive, right? Everything was just a complaint. And I'm like, all right, hold on. Like, why are we here then, right? Why are you here then if it's all that bad? I'm not saying everything's great. There are times where I've vented and been like, fuck this place, right? Mm-hmm. But mm-hmm. at the same time, there was so much that I enjoyed about the job. Mm-hmm. I enjoyed that my agency had new cars every year. Not all of them, but they changed out 1/3 of the fleet, sometimes a half of the fleet every year. It was an exciting mm-hmm. day for me to go into. And now I'm getting to see, like, I like going to get the fucking keys and the new fast cars, and it's brand new. And there's like a sense of pride with that. Or, you know, so people have to shift how they see things. Yeah, fucking my life's mm-hmm. fucked up too, right? It just is. And there's nothing I can do about that except submit to the fact that mm-hmm. my life is going to be fucked up, like your life is going to be fucked up, like his life is going to be fucked up, and shit's going to mm-hmm. happen. Mm-hmm. But like the real power is in like, hey, but there's all these other cool things going on too, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You have your health. Look at your kids. Look at your spouse or girlfriend or your friendships that you have that are wonderful. That mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. there are these moments. You don't get every moment to be perfect, but like, it's all about how you see things. And people can say, oh, this is the mm-hmm. worst. This is the worst. Now, listen, some people got to acknowledge that where they work sucks and time to move on. I'm in this relationship. It sucks. It's time to move on.
Right.
But mm-hmm. nothing's going to be perfect. Even when I was a realtor, mm-hmm. people were buying houses. I go, listen, when we get to a 9 out of 10, this is going to be the house for you, because nobody's going to find a 10, just like a spouse. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to find a 10 out of a 10. Nobody. There are things mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. you don't like about your spouse that you wish you would change, but you accept it because the other stuff is great, right? Just how it is. So you can't ever expect perfection. See the great things in life. And I appreciate you seeing that about me. And clearly for what you're doing now, you've found your why. You can, mm-hmm. you're attenuating the feelings you had and feeling the vulnerability, the victimization of these cops mm-hmm. against the bullies of the machine sometimes. So let's mm-hmm. go into that a little bit. I think we could start with what areas of law you cover. I know we spoke about before we went live here, but I know you said comp, Brady lists. What were the other ones?
Workers' comp. And what I mean by that is, I want to say briefly, because I need everybody in law enforcement to hear me when I say this. If you are somehow injured or don't feel well or something's wrong, go to a doctor make a claim for workers' comp. Number two reasons. One is the illnesses and injuries covered for first responders are more broad than for civilians. An example, hypertension. I'm not a cop anymore. Let's just say I worked for someone. If I had worked at an employer and I developed hypertension, that's not covered. That's not an on-the-job injury. It is for law enforcement. Because you have a job where you have sustained increased levels of stress for such a long time, we all know that, I'm not a doctor, but you have increased levels of stress. That means you have increased levels of cortisone, which that causes inflammation, and inflammation in the body wreaks havoc, even to the point of causing cancer. So you have a much broader list of things that are covered under workers' comp, which means that you get money to help for treatment. And maybe you have an altered quality of life, and all of that matters. But the second part of the thing you need to know is you have a finite window of when you can make that claim. So I spend a lot of time, I'll get people on the phone and say, number one is you need to make a workers' comp claim. Number two, you need to hurry up and do it. And number three, you should hire an attorney to do that. I'm not promoting myself. I talked to a girl the other day out of near Philly and said to her, I can help you find an attorney in your area, but you need to get an attorney to help you meander this, because unfortunately, even the people administering those claims don't always do it the way they're supposed to. There are state statutes that mandate how much you're supposed to be paid for workers' comp, and you don't always get that. That's not always an intentional withholding. It's just sometimes people are stupid. And so I do advise on workers' comp. The second one is harassment, discrimination, retaliation. I mean, I dealt with a lot of shit when I was on the SWAT team. And people hear me tell that story, and then they'll reach out to me and say, hey, you know, I'm not on a SWAT team, but that really sounded familiar to me. And so I hear their story and I can help them figure out whether they need to make an EEOC claim, which is Equal Employment Opportunity Commission, where you can, I could dive deeper in that, but I don't want to take too much time. But, and then
no, we have time. I mean, you do your thing. You want to dig? Well, you want to dive?
So
it's up
to you. EEOC can be, yeah, it's that, first of all, file an EEOC claim before you file a lawsuit for multiple reasons, but also you have to do that within 180 days. So somebody did something to you a year ago, it's too late. But if somebody said something to you a year ago and you decide you finally want to make a claim within your department, and then after you make that claim, they start retaliating against you, make that claim. You can file your EEOC claim and detail why you think you've been, what they're doing is wrong, including hostile work environment. And that falls within, so like, did I violate a rule and get in trouble when I was on SWAT team, but I made a mistake? Yes, I made a mistake. And so that's why I put up with it for so long. I was like, okay, you're right. I made a mistake. I can do better. Okay, next day. Oh shit, I did it again. You're right. I made a mistake. I can get better. And it's kept happening and happening. But then I started seeing that around me, nobody else was being written up. Nobody else was getting 500 mountain climbers. Nobody else was getting a month, you know, probation, don't fuck up or we're going to fire you right away. Like, nobody else was getting that stuff. So then you create this hostile work environment. And that's one example of how hostile work environment can be created. But if there's somebody out there who's hearing this, it's like, well, technically I did make a mistake, but you can still make claims on how you're being treated. And that's an example of how that can happen. I mean, you can't discriminate based on age, sex, religion. You know this because you study case law. You know, there's certain protected classes. You cannot discriminate. You can't be treated differently just because you're a woman or because you're gay or because you're of Indian descent or because you're Black. That's pretty obvious. But people do the stupidest stuff still, even though they know you can't do that. I mean, I was helping a girl on a case over the summer where this guy, I don't really want to repeat it, but said something to her out loud that was so offensive twice in front of people. And that's just dumb. Like, it's just, you have proof. It's not even like he said, she said, like you have witnesses. It's just dumb. So I spent a lot of time talking with women across the country on this harassment discrimination stuff. But lately I've been getting the most calls because I've started helping people on it. And I've gotten a lot of referrals on officers, men and women who've been placed on a Brady list. And for anybody who, like, I didn't know what it was when I was a cop, but unfortunately it's becoming a thing where Brady Giglio list, and those names come from case law where you're required to disclose what's called exculpatory evidence that could help the defense. And so one of those things is that if the if the district attorney or state attorney believes that the cop who's providing the testimony is at all untruthful, then they're required to disclose that to the defense. And unfortunately, when you get put on this Brady list, what they do is they put you on this Brady, it's called the Brady Giglio list, and then the defense attorney, the district or state attorney will then tell all defense attorneys in your district that you're a liar. And then your department will ultimately get rid of you, depending on the circumstances, and then you lose your job. And if you're truly a deadbeat liar cop, you deserve to lose your job. But unfortunately, it's happening to too many people where they're not untrustworthy. They use it for a political weapon. They use it because the DA just got mad at them. I mean, I was talking to a guy the other day who ended up investigating an ADA. The DA said, give me the case, I'll handle this. And he said, no, because there's a conflict of interest here, gave it to a third party agency, pissed off the DA. So he made up a reason to put him on the Brady Giglio list and said, you're a liar, I'm never going to take any of your cases again, except that he'll take the high profile felony cases because it makes him look good. And so he's trying to say, you're a liar, dirtbag, I'm going to ruin your career. Oh, but I'll take the things that make me look good. So it's really, once you get on the Brady Giglio list, it's really hard to get off. Unfortunately, you have to threaten to sue or sue. And then if you sue, you got to sue a whole bunch of people, and then you're going to piss off a whole bunch of people. But that might be necessary if somebody's messing around with your career and your livelihood. Imagine right before we started this podcast, I actually have 3 consultation calls today on Brady Giglio issues. It's just sad and heartbreaking. So that's what I do. I spend most of my time, and I love wellness. I'm passionate about wellness for law enforcement. One of the things you were talking about earlier on, and like the cynicism that comes along with the job or the bad things you see. And I had a hard time dealing with that when I was a baby. I call it a baby cop, new. I didn't know how to balance out protecting myself, meaning you have to assume everybody's going to hurt you. I didn't know how to balance that with not becoming a super negative, cynical, the world's a piece of shit kind of attitude. Because I didn't want to do that, and I didn't know what to do about it. And nobody was teaching me how to. I told my captain at one point, I said, I just refuse to believe bad in all people, and I don't know how to do this job if I don't. And he and I still keep in touch. He's a mentor, a great, wonderful man. But he didn't have a solution for me. And so that's why I think the wellness now is, it's better. And you teach it, that you guys provide it. And there's a lot of resources out there, which I think is great. And there's still just too many cops who don't know how to balance that. So I do have a course that helps cops. If that's what, if you like mine, great. If you don't, buy somebody else's, but do something that helps cops figure out what wellness means. Cause I think that's a missing piece. And then figure out how to implement that in your life. Cause my wellness routine is going to be different than yours. But as long as you're doing it, great. Just figure out what those things are, to find the balance so that you'll stay on the job. So I wear 2 business hats, a wellness business and a law firm business. And sometimes I think I'm absolutely nuts and not just doing one, but I can help with both. And I really want to help with both. I say I'm 47 years old, and I started this a couple years ago, but I feel like it took 45 years for me to really feel like this is what I'm supposed to do with my life, is help cops in the way that I think I uniquely can, given my experience and education.
You are a very interesting person. And the reason I say that is because I know what you're going through. I had to walk away from my real estate company. I built in a very short time, a very significant, very successful real estate team. And again, it's just kind of figured out how to unlock a lot of shit, and I had to walk away from a significant 6-figure position to do street cop training 100%. And what I want to say to you is, they are tough decisions to make. The world is clear on how to do it. And if you're going to make impact, you're probably going to want to have all your eggs in one basket, at least in the beginning, until you can diversify and figure it all out. That's just advice from me to you on a business front. It's scary because, what happens if something happens to street cop training? Many years ago, I met with a woman. An incident happened at my job, and they wanted me to see a therapist just because it was the run of the mill. This is what you got to do. And I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. That's the fucking rules. I'll go see this woman. I didn't see a therapist in the interim for 7 or 8 years. I never felt like I needed to. I'm glad that I go now. Again, I don't make it a secret. It's more of a conversation with somebody that has really no judgment. I can say anything and not be judged. Yep. And she actually knows who I am and understands what I'm saying. And she's a cheerleader of mine. She's like, I think you're great. And da, da, da. Like, anyway, and I don't go there to get feel good about somebody giving me compliments. I go there to almost like check myself. Like, hey,
yeah,
like I need a real neutral position on some of the things that I'm doing. Are, is this good? Or is it like, not, you know, like, am I doing this right? Mm-hmm. Da, da, da. And there's a lot of stuff to learn anyway. So I want to go back for a second to two things. One, you said people should make a claim when they're sick under comp. How do they make a claim?
So it's different by state, but you basically, there's going to be, you get basically, and if you're not sure, go to HR and say, look, I don't feel well, I'm sick. It might, you go to see your doctor and then you could get some kind of diagnosis. You could even Google it. I mean, I like, honestly, I could make more money as an attorney if I got paid for, I say, literally the girl from Philly, I said, you don't need to pay me for this, but I'm going to email you. I'll literally just give you the Google search terms. Literally just, you can Google first responder, workers' comp illness, and you'll get a list of things that you would qualify. But then you, like, there's things you got to do. You got to make sure you get the right diagnosis from the right doctor. But then there's, it gets very, can get kind of complicated to the lay person that maybe you didn't go to go, you didn't get the right doctor to give you a diagnosis. And then you go to the doctor and then they might not agree, but then because it's like the company, man, but then you get, that's okay. There's something you can do about that. That's why you need a lawyer involved, because the lawyer can help you say, no, they don't get to deny this. We just have to file an appeal. We have to file this paperwork. We have to get approval to get this doctor's opinion used instead of that. So there's ways to do it. And I'm licensed to practice in four different states. I've actually taken four bar exams, which is why I have these pieces of paper behind me. And not that I'm being bragging about that, except that taking a bar exam is a pain in the ass. And I passed every one of them. So I put up these very expensive pieces of paper behind me. But it's different in New York. It's different. Like, I'm licensed in Texas, Florida, New York, and Louisiana. It's different in each one. And I do all my continuing education on just those topics, so that, because it changes, or there's new case law that comes out. I mean, you know how case law works. It's, some of it's statutory by the legislature. Some of it comes from case law, what a judge says, and sometimes that changes. So anyway, you go to HR and say, I went to the doctor. They said I have this thing. It's from work. What do I do? And then they'll tell you how to get it started. But what my advice is, if you think you have a workers' comp claim, talk to an attorney who specializes in workers' comp, because like I said, I promise you your department will undervalue it or not give you all the money that you're entitled to, or they'll just flat out say, like, one doctor will say you need surgery. There, the company man doctor will say, no, you don't. Yes, you need a lawyer to help you to fight that. And if you're worried about what that costs, one of the good things is the client end for workers' comp is that there's caps on what lawyers can charge in workers' comp versus like a normal personal injury type case. Sometimes they'll take as much as 40% of what you get, but they cannot do that in workers' comp. And you have to get your attorney's fees approved, or the statute will say you can only get this much. So yes, you'll have to pay your attorney, but that's governed by state law or judge approval. So it's worth the money, because you'll get more money if you hire an attorney.
I have a few more questions. One I definitely want to address, but since we're on this topic, and I know the answer to this, how does somebody with no experience find a good attorney? And then the reason I'm going to preamble this just a little bit, I'm somebody who doesn't really go with the flow. I'm a real problem with being a sheep. So
what?
And I would hear some people shocked. Say like, yeah, I have a real problem with rules. You know, so even though I was a law enforcement, I have a real problem with like how it's done. I understand and respect the law, but like how it's done was never, SOPs is not something that we could always do better. Well, anyway, if you got hurt where I worked or other places, they would say, call these guys, they'll take care of you. Now I never called those guys. I always found somebody independently on my own, right, wrong, or indifferent. I just could not submit to doing what everybody else did. So the people that are in my corner right now, oh, they're good. Right. And I didn't take long for me, who's familiar with the law, to recognize it. All right, this is a good one. Right. I can hear the things they're saying. I'll interview, even if I get 10-minute calls with them. I'll try to find somebody who's going to communicate with me, who's going to be available for phone calls. And again, we're not sitting here harassing our attorney all day long, but is this at least going to be responsive, who sounds compassionate, who doesn't sound cocky, who likes the case, who is honest and a straight shooter, gives me my options, what it's going to cost. I like hearing things like, look, dude, I'm not trying to blow your money. You're going to have options. I'm not going to take the case if I don't think I can win it. With that being said, from an attorney's perspective, how would somebody go about finding a good attorney?
Okay, a lot of what you just said in terms of qualifications. I honestly, my referrals come from the people that I'm calling me are coming from people that they've reached out to within their network. And so like, I don't like the Facebook groups. There are a good, I don't know, how many Facebook groups are there? How many law enforcement Facebook groups are there? So many. But if you're going to just get in one and join it, and then it doesn't matter, you don't have to be like a regular member, just get in one and like, and just post the question and say, hey, and you can, because you can even post it anonymously. They don't have to find you necessarily. I'm dealing with this problem. Does anybody have a recommendation for a lawyer? How did you get started? I would say that is a great place to start, because the referrals I'm getting are coming from somebody that I have represented. I haven't even helped her solve her problem. But what I did was, I mean, she knows I 100% know what she's going through. I've been there. I know the legal world. I know the law enforcement world. And so for me, like, she trusts what I say, and she trusts if I'm going to say, yes, I think you can do this. But I've also said, no, this is not going to work for you. She also knows I am only going to charge for what I do. And but also at some point, like these three calls I have today, I just got off the phone with one. I said, look, I'm going to email you a proposal for a retainer, because I need to look at all this stuff you're talking about before I can tell, before I can even tell you what to do next. And that takes hours of my time. But to me, it's getting the referral from some network that you're in. But then the second one would be to, like, everybody is having somebody that's culturally competent, meaning somehow you find a lawyer who either has already been working with first responders or was a first responder in some way. It's rare that you'll find an attorney who was a cop or was a firefighter or whatever, but they do exist. You can Google it. To me, it's starting with get in some network somewhere and ask that group, who have you worked with? Who have you called on to get advice, and seeing if you can get that referral? And then if not, it's like you said, it's just, do not be afraid to call more than one person. If I'm spending money in my house, I'm going to get three quotes before I pick one. And it's hard. I got one, I like them, I'm going to go with that first one. And then I force myself, nope, I'm going to call two more, at least two more. And so that's definitely call around, have three phone calls. You shouldn't pay for a phone call. That would be the other one. You should always be able to get like an initial phone call for free.
For like 10 minutes, really, right? Lawyers. 10 minutes, 5, yeah. 10 minutes.
Like mine,
not
is
the 15, 1 hour, right? Consults,
15.
Right?
No, mine is you get 15 minutes for free. And then if I think I need to dig deeper, I'll tell you. And then I tell you what my rate is or hear my proposal. Same thing with you. I talked to the guy the other day and I sent him, I said, okay, he had all this stuff he wanted me to look at. And I said, okay, and my retainer is $7,000. I said, I earn it. And I told him, I said, straight up, if I start looking through this and I don't think there's something I can do for you, I will give the remainder of that retainer back. It's not $7,000, mine forever. No, I have to earn that, but I need you to pay into that, because I know from doing these things that it is nothing for me to spend 10 hours or 20 hours just in the review and analyzing phase. And what I know and my experience matters. And you want an attorney who has that amount of confidence to say, yes, I can help you, but it's going to, you have to pay for it. And then you need to be willing to know that if you have a lawyer that's worth their salt, then they're going to want you to pay something. Anybody who is not wanting you to pay something, like, I don't really know what that would be worth for you. So I would skip it. And I would also say, at the risk of me not getting a case, which is what happened with the guy with the $7,000 retainer, he checked in with his union. If you're in a union, ask them if they can help you. Don't just be like me, like I did, and not ask because you thought they were all assholes. Still, if you're facing, especially civil, and you're not sure if it's something your union covers, ask, because they might have some kind of resource that can at least reduce the fees you might need to pay, or they might have a network of civil attorneys for you to contact. Things like that. Like in Texas, I feel like we have 8,032 unions around here, and every state's different, but they can make a referral. They can maybe get you, like this guy was going to check in with his union because they reimburse legal fees. I mean, you just never know So reach out within your network, reach out within your union. And then, like you said, interview them. That's your money. You should be willing to pay, and it's still your money. So choose somebody that you feel understands you, is, like you said, empathetic, preferably somebody who's culturally competent, meaning they understand the world you live in, because there's nothing like the job of law enforcement. And you want somebody who understands that. Just like a therapist, pick a therapist who is culturally competent, and it's no different. So that's a typical lawyer answer. It depends. And then I'll ramble on.
I have two more questions. The last one's going to be good. You're going to love it. But I wanted to talk about this one before, because I got to tell you, it comes up all the time. And there'll be two pieces of advice here. Horny admins. So let's talk about this, because my advice before you give your advice is, if you would like to have sex, try not to do it with your subordinates. You know what? Go out and try to find somebody else. Now, the repercussions behind that, let's start with that now. So since we're here, and then I'm going to do the other side of it. What are the repercussions for somebody who gets caught on the wrong side of a sexual harassment lawsuit? What are you going after?
I mean, I'd say throw the spaghetti at the wall and see what sticks. I'm going after all of it, and then just see what you can get. And I ask clients a lot. I always ask, and then I'm adding this to my call when I book 15-minute call with people, is what do you want out of this? Are you wanting to decimate somebody's entire life and career and reputation? You want them fired? Do you want them transferred? Do you want to be transferred? Do you want compensation? That's harder to get. You know, did you suffer? If you're not physically injured and you want money, or did they fire you? Did you make a claim and you were retaliated against and they fight? Like, I know a female who made a claim, and this guy grabbed her ass, and she didn't say anything about it. She was like, literally was just so upset. She needed to take a couple of days over it. But the guys around it saw it. They were mad. They reported it, which is great. That didn't ever happen. I was never physically harassed in the sense that nobody ever grabbed my ass or whatever, but I wish somebody would have stood up for me and reported, like, hey, this isn't fair. But she did. And then they held it against her that she didn't report it. And then her chief, like, she and her chief got in a screaming match over, and it's ridiculous. So my advice, I had this secretary in our narcotics unit. We called her mom. Mom said this to me one time: don't get your honey where you get your money. I think that's for anybody. You just, students, you start mixing sex and work, that can make things complicated, especially as a female. If you are a female, you are already under a spotlight, and you should be very, very wary, leery, cautious, worried about getting any kind of relationship with somebody you work with. And if you're the dude, and especially if you're a supervisor, and if you are the bigger your agency, the more likely you are to have policies against that. And the bigger your agency, the more likely they'll follow those policies, and the more likely that they will punish you, the more likely that that you as the supervisor will be punished and the subordinate will not. The smaller the agency, the more likely the subordinate will be pushed out, even if it wasn't his or her fault in any way. People do the stupidest stuff. When I left the SWAT team, two of the guys paged me. It's back in the day of pagers. And two of them asked, so you're not on SWAT team now, does this mean we can have sex? I was like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, so you were one of the nice ones. Does that mean the only reason you've been nice to me for 2 years was because you were waiting for this opportunity? Go fuck yourself. So people do really stupid stuff. My advice is just don't. Just don't. And I'm telling you, the bigger your department, the more likely you will get in trouble for it. And anybody who's on the receiving end of it, the smaller the department, the more likely you'll suffer just by reporting it, which is not fair. And I'm not saying you shouldn't report it, but it matters what department you're at, and it matters how many people are there, and the SOPs also matter.
You think if somebody's feeling harassed, and by the way, I'm also going to jump in here and say, I know of stories of female supervisors harassing male and female subordinates. Mm-hmm. You think it's a smart idea for, if somebody's feeling like they're harassed, at least getting some validation and some advice from an attorney, getting one of those 10 or 15 minute calls in? Because I don't want to encourage people not to do anything. That's not the message that Bridget is imploring here. I think that you should. Would you agree that maybe consulting an attorney at least for 10 or 15 minutes, having the courage to say, what should I do? Because there are things you have to checklist before you can actually move forward with litigation. Like, I think if I recall correctly, and I'm completely out of my fucking arena to speak about this, but you have to deny the claim. You have to tell somebody, I don't like that, right? Don't do that again. Isn't that like some of the, outside of some egregious thing, if somebody ripped your pants down, it'd be a different story. But, you know, some of these advances have to be, did you tell them don't do it again, right? All this stuff matters. So maybe having advice from an attorney and building a case before taking action and then taking complete tidal wave action against the, but, and again, I'm not sitting here trying to say that like everybody should try to sue their agency. But I also think it's fucking ridiculous that I got to hear about a deputy chief who hugs a girl four times at a Christmas party so he can feel her boobs. And he said that as he was drunk. Right. Oh, like, and this, you're talking about 23-year-old rookie cops with these 54-year-old horny beer belly fucking losers. Right.
Yeah. Who are going to be afraid to say something because they're baby cops and they want to keep their job and they don't want to be singled out. And like me, I just wanted to be remembered for the value of what I did as a SWAT operator, as a narcotics investigator. I didn't want to be remembered. Oh, as that girl who caused trouble. So I didn't say anything. And one, there are several repercussions for that. One is, how can your agency know what to fix if they don't know what needs to be fixed? And then number two is, it took me that much longer to get over the shit that I went through at my department because I never said anything. And it took me 15 years before I even wanted to talk to any of those guys again. Those are just, I don't believe in holding on to that kind of stuff anyway, because it's just, your body doesn't need to hold it onto that negative energy. But you should definitely say something. And yes, there's a lot of value in, if it's a quick issue, but they're never quick issues, they're always very emotional issues. And what I've done for people is I offer 1 hour paid consultations where, send me all the paperwork you want me to look at, I'll review it, we'll get on a phone call, and then at the end of it, I tell you is what I think you should do. You know, you don't always need me to do it for you. You just want to understand the EEOC. You want me to explain why you should or should not have mediation. You don't have to choose mediation in EEOC claim, but you might want that. I can tell you how to do that. And I've done that more than once where I just get up, somebody pays me for 1 hour and I review their stuff. And so I think it's worth, you know, and my rates aren't that, I mean, I'll tell you, my rate's $350. I think it's low. And, but I'm willing to do that because I'll just pay me for 1 hour. Most people can afford that 1 hour. And at least then you get answers and you know what your options are. And just knowing that, I just wish I had known what to do when I was in that position. And that's why I offer that 1 hour at a reasonable rate and say, look, I'm just going to educate you on what your options are. And if you want me to help you pass that, after that, I can. I mean, that's why this summer I had a 1 hour consultation. I met with her and her attorney. She liked me because I've been a cop and he didn't know that world. And so, and then they ended up hiring me to pay me much more than that to help with the EEOC claim and the lawsuit going forward. But yes, 100%, it's worth talking to a lawyer, especially somebody like me, and not necessarily me, but you know, I understand the world. I understand what you're facing. I understand the potential fallout or consequences of you saying something. You don't necessarily have to verbalize, don't do that. Again, it all depends on what state you're in. It depends on the size of your department, what the policies are. And so there's a lot of what ifs. And that's why, because there's so many what ifs, it's definitely worth, you know, getting that free 15-minute call and then paying for that extra hour to help you figure out what to do with it, because it will you will positively benefit in your mental health if you do that for yourself going forward, I promise. How do I know that? Because I suffered it personally by not doing it.
Your why of what you do and why you do it is profound. It's oozing out of you. It's like a volcano. As soon as we get to who you were and why you're here now and what you're doing for that, essentially every client I imagine is in your eyes, you at your younger age when you first started your career. So my final question for you today is, knowing what your why is and why you're so passionate, is what kind of feeling do you get when you right a wrong?
It's amazing, because I talk so much about how it's not the outcome. You won't, you know, like, you can find happiness now. You don't have to wait till then. Oh, I'll be happy if I'm not with that sergeant anymore. I'll be happy if that sergeant that, you know, gets fucking fired and written up and whatever. Because if I can help, I know that I'm helping them feel that happiness in this moment, in this day, even if the problem isn't over. And a lot of times I can't, like the Brady Giglio stuff, sometimes I can't do anything about that. But just knowing that I'm able to talk through and I can, and they know that I understand what they're going through, to me, I feel like people want to be heard more than all people on this planet just want to feel heard. They want to feel understood. They want to feel like they matter. And so even when I get to listen to them and represent them and help them, and like that, that's what this is about. I hated being a lawyer for a long time because I felt like what I did didn't matter. I think that what cops do matters. You don't feel like it all the time, but it's a fact. What you do matters in this world. It matters in our country. And I don't care what all the negative shit out there is, what you do matters, you matter. And what I'm able to do is if I can give them that feeling, like to restore some of that, then I have succeeded. I want you to feel heard, even if I can't fix your problem. And so, yes, it's 100%. Absolutely. I feel like what I do in my legal work, I've said this a lot, is I feel like legal support is a wellness tool, that even if I can't solve your problem, I'm still giving you the information and knowledge that you need to move forward. Maybe it's doing nothing, but at least you're doing that because that's a decision you're making and you don't feel acted upon, that you're taking action. And that to me is amazing.
In my head, while you were talking, I just had like that clapping, like that, like, you know what I mean? Like the whole time you're talking, I'm like, this is it. That was a great answer. And where can people find you?
LadyLawShield.com is my law firm website. That's where you can go to book that free 15-minute phone call. Yeah, I describe the stuff I do. There's law enforcement affects your life and it's very pervasive. You know, it spills over into everything. So I'm always happy. It doesn't have to be on those legal topics, but it's 15 minutes for free. Book the call. I want to help. Follow me on Instagram. I will be sharing starting soon, regularly, I don't know how often, monthly, little tips, things to know. But LadyLawShield.com is my website. And that you can follow me on Instagram, LinkedIn, all the places.
This morning, when Frankie every morning texts me like 6 a.m., he's like, these are your podcasts today. So I knew you were coming on, just that I have so much going on. So I just look at the calendar and I'm like, okay, cool. Then I was like looking it over again. I'm like, oh, this is gonna be a good one. I could just feel it. Just reading your bio on your website. I'm like, I don't even have to go much into it. Typically, I try to do a little bit of research. I'm like, there's no research to be done. This is gonna be somebody just like me. I can fucking feel it. And a lot of this stuff, a lot of my motivation for the work that we do is the same reason you're motivated to do the work that you do. I was that person. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have known. I wish I had somebody put their hand on my shoulder and have compassion and empathy and guide me and tell me, this is what I need to know. This is how I should behave. Nobody did that. So knowing that nobody did that, that's why we're all here doing this work, and it all matters. So the work you're doing is great. Don't feel guilty about it at all. People really appreciate you taking the time out today. And you just did something great for the world. And every time we do this, that's all we do it for. It's a selfless act of, here, we know this. We want to help you. I could choose not to tell you anything about this, but I want you to know it because I think it's important. And that's what you did today. And Merry Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas to you too, with my little Santa that I got here.
Yeah, your Santa brooch. I got to get one of those. I'm fucking jealous.
Well, it's very special. So I said it was my grandmother's. I was very close to my grandmother. She passed a couple years ago. So I always get very happy when I get to put it on at Christmas time.
That's awesome.
So thank you so much. I also knew that this would be a great interview. I'm very much looking forward to it. You're very authentic. It comes across in everything that you do. Thank you for doing what you do. Keep doing it. I know you hear from a lot of people. You said you don't get a chance to get back to all those messages, but it's so far beyond that. I mean, you know, people are quick to tell you what you do wrong, but they don't. They're not always as quick to tell you what you do right. So that just means however many people that do reach out to you to give you the positive stuff, and at least multiply it by four. It's like four times that amazing number. And it ripples beyond that so much more. So it matters what you do, and keep on keeping on.
I hope we're friends for life.
We are. Come to Houston.
I'm going to send, Frankie's going to send you my cell phone number, and we're going to set it up. Just send her my cell phone number, text me, I'll put your number in my phone. And I promise you, when I come to Houston, I'll text you and look you up. And if you need anything in the interim, you could reach out to me anytime you want. And we'll do this again, by the way.
Okay, great. Like I said, we're podcast friends. I don't drop my friends. So I will definitely stay in touch.
All right. Sounds good. Enjoy the holidays. Great meeting you.
Thank you.
Guys, if you're in an area where you're trying to get to our classes, but we're not close to you, fret not. We actually have on-demand training at StreetCop.com. You can take that course online right now, and then You could attend that training in the future at no additional cost. You can redeem your voucher. So you get two for the price of one. We don't want to deny you the ability to take this training now, especially knowing that it can keep you safe, at a very minimum, putting bad guys in jail where they belong, and at the maximum, going home to your family. Check out StreetCop.com for that offer.